This is the Crisis Point. My friends, welcome to the Crisis Point podcast, where, like G.K. Chesterton, we discuss nothing except for politics and religion, because, well, there's nothing else to discuss. I am your host, Michael Warren Davis, the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine, and I thank you for joining me. This week, the rebirth of the Ottoman Empire. Since he was elected president of Turkey in 2014, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has made absolutely no bones about the fact that he seeks to transform the ostensibly secular government of Turkey into an Islamic state. He effectively already has. Since the beginning of the Syrian civil war, Turkey has been arming to the teeth a group known as the Free Syrian Army, which is anything but. It is effectively a Turkish puppet state. And it has been used to spread the Turkish Islamist hegemon into Syria, combating the forces of the secularist Bashar al-Assad. But his latest bid to Islamize the Turkish government and Turkish society is even more egregious, especially to Christians. As many listeners, I'm sure, have already heard, Erdogan has announced that he intends to turn Hagia Sophia, the Cathedral of Hagia Sophia, back into a mosque. Now, it was technically functioning as a mosque, or has been, since 1453, when Constantinople was conquered by the Turks, taken from the Greek Orthodox, and the Hagia Sophia Cathedral was turned into a mosque. This was in 1453. Almost 500 years later, the newly secularized government of Turkey voted to turn Hagia Sophia into a museum rather than giving it back to its rightful owners, the Christians, but no matter. But now, in 2020, Erdogan has decided that he's going to turn the Hagia Sophia back into a mosque, and prayers are expected to begin on the 24th. The USCCB, to their great credit, has declared July 24th today a day of mourning for Hagia Sophia. Pope Francis has sort of condemned the gesture. He was quoted as saying, "I think of Santa Sophia, and I am very pained." But to her great credit, the president of Greece, who is technically an independent but who serves alongside a conservative prime minister, said that she called Pope Francis and urged him to condemn the re-annexation of Hagia Sophia in the strongest possible terms. She said that the renovation of Hagia Sophia back into a mosque, quote, deeply hurts those who consider it the top symbol of Christianity and the world's cultural heritage. Now, of course, we as Catholics would probably prefer to think of St. Peter's as sort of the center of Christendom, but there's absolutely no doubt that for the Greek Orthodox, and for most of the Eastern Orthodox, in fact, you know, Hagia Sophia is still very much a symbol of what they have lost over the centuries. You know, the seat of the Greek Orthodox Ecumenical Patriarch is in Turkey. It's not even in Greece, because Constantinople remains the holy city in the center of Eastern Christendom, despite its long exile, despite the long occupation by Turkish Ottoman forces. But we'll come back to that, because I think it's important to drive home that President Erdogan, his policy of rolling back the secularization of Turkey that began after World War II World War I under Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, which is known as Kemalism, you know, that form of Turkish secular nationalism. Erdogan has, you know, been the great foe of that secularizing, republicanizing tendency. And his Islamist dictatorship, which is exactly what it is, has even been dubbed Neo-Ottomanism. You can look that up on Wikipedia. It's the word for it. And as we all know from the Battle of Lepanto and other very grievous, the invasion of Vienna, Turkey under the Ottomans and Christendom do not get along, and they're not going to get along. And if there was any hope that in this new age of ecumenism and sort of interreligious dialogue, if there was any hope at all that we could make peace with Islamic Ottoman Turkey, here we have President Erdogan coming out and saying, nope, I'm going to pre-reject any peace offering you might want to offer us. We are going to completely Islamize every inch of soil in our hegemon. Anywhere we can, we are going to use the power of the Turkish government to spread Islamic beliefs, Islamic practices, Islamic culture, and there's nothing that you can do about it. The whole thing has an interesting symbolic layer too, though, doesn't it? Because when the Kemalist government converted Hagia Sophia into a museum initially in 1934, it seemed to sort of herald a new way of thinking about the relationship between Christians and Muslims. And it seemed to say that, as the president of Greece put it, we have this, quote, world cultural heritage that we all kind of share, and we can sort of move between these institutions of worship and realize that we all basically worship the same God because we all basically share the same values. We're all sort of conforming to the same order and therefore to the same creator. And I guess that it somehow extends to atheists, but whatever, we'll just leave that behind. So, it might have been that new age of ecumenism and interfaith dialogue that the Vatican II fathers were anticipating, and that, you know, people like Pope Francis, powerful, well-meaning, I'm sure, Catholics, are still so enthused about. But all along there were people that were saying, on both sides, to their sort of ecumenically minded people, look, the dam's going to break eventually. We're not going to be able to keep this up. We're just too different. Our worldviews are fundamentally incompatible. And, you know, of course, the New York Times ran an op-ed about turning Hagia Sophia back into a mosque. And it was by a Muslim who says that, of course, Muhammad would have abhorred this because Muhammad was a good, progressive, liberal, multiculturalist, as you can see from these passages in the Quran where, you know, anyway, you've heard that a million times before, and we've ran a million articles refuting that ridiculous imposition of modern values onto Islam, which have never existed in Islam in the first place. And that's entirely the point, because you can ask nicely secularized upper-middle-class Muslims that write for the New York Times what they think Islam would do in this situation, what they think Muhammad would do, would he approve of this gesture, and they'll say no. But if you ask actual Muslim leaders and Muslims who live in majority Muslim countries across the Middle East, they're going to say, yes, absolutely, I think this is fantastic, this is how it should be. There can be no competition. We cannot tolerate any religion that contradicts Islam. There is one God, and Muhammad is his prophet, is what they say, and if you do not profess that belief, then you must be forced to. That's the Muhammad practiced forced conversions, and every Islamic leader up until the modern day essentially has done the same. And to say that Muhammad misunderstood himself and that all subsequent leaders therefore misunderstood Muhammad is fatuous. It's ridiculous. But this kind of lying to ourselves about the nature of Islam and hoping that Muslims will then lie about themselves about the nature of Islam has been our game plan pretty much since the beginning. We have allowed wave after wave of refugee come into this country, into across Europe as well. The Pope has signed these concords with imams and things like that. Pope John Paul II kissed a Quran because we're all just so certain that in just a few years after we could just pave over all the hurt feelings of the last couple millennia. And we would all be able to join hands and sing Kumbaya, and we would realize that we're all brothers and sisters under the same God, and it would be fantastic. But of course that didn't happen. And if we're going to be perfectly honest with ourselves, most Muslims had no intention of ever doing that. And you do get, you know, a range of people from Muslim leaders like the Shah of Iran, or Mustafa Kemal Ataturk, who really genuinely seemed to want to achieve some kind of secular order, some coexistence between Muslims and Christians and other non-believers, Jews, whatever. To a certain extent, Bashar al-Assad is an example of one of them now, but they're all beleaguered. They're beleaguered by by large groups of Islamists. And while you can hope that, by all means, that secularists are going to triumph, we can certainly lend them our material and moral support where they exist, and we should. But I don't think, but in the meantime, we really shouldn't have any illusions about Islam, and that's the point. And so the question is, now that, again, the great enemy of Christendom, the Ottoman Empire, has been reborn, well, what do we do about it? We've already had this shot across the bow. Erdogan has already declared war on Western civilization again, so what do we do about it? And my theory is this. I think Pope Francis should get all of his best friends into a room. Putin and Trump and Orban and, all these guys that he really, really loves and that really love him. And he should say, whatever our disagreements, and he will have much to disagree with these leaders with, we have to support the president of Greece and all the Christian peoples of the world in demanding the right to reclaim our shared inheritance. We are representatives of individual nations, the Americans, the Russians, the Hungarians, the Greeks. We have our duty to our individual people, but we also have our duty to our shared civilization, our way of life. And whatever the individual creeds of our peoples, whether they're Christians, Muslims, Jews, whatever, we have, by our very way of life, by the very cities that we live in, by the democracies and the republics and the monarchies that we have inherited, we are the beneficiaries of Christian civilization. And so we have a duty to defend that civilization. We have a duty to fight for Hagia Sophia. Not because we are not necessarily because we're believing Christians, but because we are the beneficiaries of the Christian religion. And again, imagine if all the great nations of the Western world decided to put economic and diplomatic pressure on Erdogan. We could do something. Maybe we could do something. Because think about it, and this is just such a poignant reminder of how painful this betrayal by Turkey is. At least it should be to those that ever trusted Turkey. But, until recently, and I think it might still be, Turkey was under consideration for membership to the European Union. And this was supposed to show that, despite the fact that Turkey is mostly in Asia, and despite the fact that they would be the only non-Christian country in the European Union, or historically Christian, it was supposed to be this warm, grand gesture that, Europe is really a borderless concept, and that anyone can be part of Europe if they just really, really want to, and they can join this grand pact of cooperation and mutual security, and we'll all love each other, and hold hands and sing Kumbaya, and it'll be fantastic. And, of course, this was Erdogan that was sort of leading this push. All the while, he was fully prepared to relaunch this neo-Ottoman project and try to take down the West. And all the while, we talk about the Muslim Brotherhood. How long have we been talking about that for? At least since the Obama era. That has been a major foreign policy concern, has been the reach of the Muslim Brotherhood across the Middle East and even into local elections like Sweden. Swedish elections are very heavily influenced by the Muslim Brotherhood. So are Belgium's. Not only places in the Middle East, especially Egypt, which has a very strong Muslim Brotherhood presence, but even in European countries. The Muslim Brotherhood is just another word for the Turkish government. The Turkish government is the number one sponsor of the Muslim Brotherhood worldwide. Number two is Qatar, which is a very old ally of Turkey, co-sponsors of the Free Syrian Army and have been since its founding. These are all just client states, entities, extensions of the Turkish hegemon. Again, even as he was playing these useful idiots in the European Union and the New York Times like a fiddle, Erdogan all the while has been planting the seeds to Islamize not only Turkey, but Europe itself. And look, that's just the way it is. And as we can say with a clean conscience, We didn't start the culture war. We didn't initiate the clash of civilizations, but we can end it. Because, again, regardless of what your individual creed is, whatever your individual background, Turkey, and especially under President Erdogan, has designs on the West. He wants to destroy our civilization and our way of life. And that's not a sort of a deus vult, you know, grab your shields and horses and ride into battle sort of thing. But this is a serious threat. This is a serious ideological, civilizational threat being posed by Turkey. This was just the shot across the bow, too. And it will be, and it should be, a number one priority of every Western government, whether they're conservative or liberal or Christian or secular, to contain this, the threat of Turkish Islamism, because it's only just beginning now. And there's a fascinating article in The Economist, the latest Economist, talking about how these oil kingdoms like Saudi Arabia might finally be teetering on the verge of collapse. And that's good news to those of us who have been aware that Saudi Arabia is the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world, that they're not our allies, that they're our enemies, our bitter enemies, and that in 100 years we're going to look back on our children are going to look back on our relationship with Turkey, rather with Saudi Arabia, Freudian slip, and say, wow, this is, it's like the United States working with the Chinese. Freudian slip. It's like the United States working with the Russians. It's unconscionable. How are we ever at peace with this evil empire? Same thing with Saudi Arabia. We know this. Saudi Arabia hates our guts. They want to destroy us. They are Wahhabists. They are state sponsors of terrorism. They do want to bring down the United States. And yet we make them fat off the wealth that we give them to buy their oil. Now, even if Saudi Arabia goes over the cliff because they have nothing going for them except for their natural resources, even if the oil market collapses and Saudi Arabia becomes destitute and plunged into another 1,000 years of neo-feudalism, there will still be Turkey. And again, those of us who are aware of the threat being posed by Islamist countries are often not very keenly aware of the threat posed by Turkey. And that is due to their outstanding PR campaigns, that they are sort of seen as the westernized country. And this is partially, you know, Erdogan's genius for PR, partially the fact that for a while, the Kemalist Turkish government was fairly modernized and fairly secularized. But that is an illusion. It's a smokescreen. It's a dangerous subterfuge. And it must be put away forever. We must not, we never can, underestimate the threat posed by Turkish Islamism, not only to the Hagia Sophia, not only to Europe, but to the United States as well. There is possibly no single greater domestic threat to Europe from a foreign power than that which is posed by Turkey. And if we were any closer, they'd be a bigger threat to us too. Thankfully, the threat right now is somewhat remote, but it won't be forever. And so, if there has ever been the need to contain a rising evil empire, there is a need to contain Turkey. And again, not with guns blazing, but as we have these stupid, petty ideological disputes with countries like Orbán's Hungary and Putin's Russia, our enemies abroad are growing stronger. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, China, all of them have designs on Western power. All of them want to knock us down a peg, and we can't afford to fight amongst ourselves. Western civilization must come first. Christendom must come first. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week, but I'm very grateful to you all for joining me. Once again, my name is Michael Warren Davis. This is the Crisis Point Podcast, and until next Friday, thank you all again, and God bless you.